countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Now with our highest ever readership of 321,000 weekly readers.
Now, as it's our first show of the new year, we thought we'd look ahead to some of the challenges and opportunities which face farmers and food producers against the backdrop of reducing emissions while continuing to provide us with fresh, safe food and, of course, sustaining their own livelihoods, which is the heartbeat of rural communities, not only in Ireland, but indeed right across the European Union. Now, joining me are Diana Lindsay, who's president of CEJA, which is the umbrella body for young farmer lobby groups right across Europe. Catherine Cleary is a journalist, author and broadcaster. And Phelan O'Neill, markets intelligence specialist with the Irish Farmers Journal. You're all very welcome to the programme. Delighted to have you on this first programme of the year. Phelan, I'm going to begin with you. Before we look forward, let's briefly look back. 2021 has been such a challenging year for so many sectors of the economy. But what sort of year has it been for Irish agriculture and food producers?
Good morning, Damien, and Happy New Year. Yeah, 2021, when we look back on it, and I think in time, when the further we come away from it, we look back on it even more fondly. It was, in some respects, a pretty perfect year for agriculture from the point of view that we had reasonably strong markets across the main commodities of meat and dairy. Difficulties in the pig meat sector, particularly in the second half of the year, and they're going through a particularly horrendous period at present, and the same with poultry. But overall, for Irish farmers, 2021 would have to be classified as a reasonably good year because markets were good. Weather, the sun shone when it was required, we had rain when it was required, it was pretty good conditions.
Yeah, it's a remarkable achievement, Phelan, when you consider that food processors were hit by staff shortages due to COVID, mart sales went online, huge change in that regard, and you know, gatherings and meetings and knowledge transfer events were cancelled. It's really interesting that farming had such a good year against that backdrop. But with input costs gone through the roof, and farmers listening can tell you all about the cost of fertiliser now, are there bigger challenges and roadblocks ahead in 2022?
I think that's very much, Damien, the cloud that's on the horizon and maybe closer to us than on the horizon at the moment for anyone that's trying to buy fertilisers, that's buying diesel, energy costs, input costs have all escalated. And you're right, you know, the pandemic has shown us that amongst the many frontline workers that we have, I suppose farmers are the first link in the food chain. And farmers found a way to adapt their business, doing business through marts, going online, etc. They found a way to adapt to ensure that the supply chain was kept going from their end, and indeed then on into the processing sector where the factory workers as well, they had their difficulties, but they did manage to keep going. Going into 2022 then, the big challenge is, you know, when it's a great one in terms of reliability of energy supply. You know, we've had serious threats to it, if you like, in the last months of 2021. We've seen the costs escalate, and we're going to find that when we come to putting the fuel in our cars, when we come to putting the oil in our tanks or energy for our heating and our light. And that will apply, of course, to farmers too on a much larger scale, because not only have they the domestic side of their livelihood, they have also their farms to operate. And that is the big challenge going into the year ahead, that any gains in price that were achieved in 21 are very quickly eaten up by escalating costs.
Yeah, it's a cyclical nature indeed of farming. Catherine Cleary, you've written an awful lot about ways that Irish farmers can reinvent themselves and diversify, and you've met such farmers around the country indeed. But of course, farmers need to be financially sustainable as well. So what do you say to a young dairy or a young beef farmer about to take over the family farm?
Good morning, Damien. I mean, it's a really interesting time, and Happy New Year to everybody. It has been a very challenging year, and I was really struck by that teacher in Art School, Namara, talking about one child in every class not able to come to school because they are anxious. So, you know, on one side, we have a balance sheet that's looking healthy for farming. But I think on the other side, we have the reality of the challenges ahead, which, you know, as I speak, the rain is tipping out of the sky and we have soils that are much less able to take those quantities of rain. So, you know, it's very, the fertilizer issue is a really interesting one, because I think that's where a more sustainable, regenerative approach to farming can really show benefits to a farmer's pocket, in that I think RTÉ ran a story during the week about a dairy farmer in Limerick who's using clover to replace nitrogen, synthetic nitrogen fertilizer, because clover fixes nitrogen. So there are all, nature has all of these fixes, and we need to use a lot of those to transition farmers to a point where they are farming more with high nature value farming, because that's not something that's just a sort of a sentimental, oh, isn't that, that would be a lovely idea. It's actually a better income for a farmer, because when you get to the scenario where you're farming within the footprint of the resources of your farm, then your input costs are dropping through the floor, and the product that you're selling at the other end of that is also rising in price, because those are the products that consumers want to buy.
Yeah. Interesting you mentioned there that farmer, because, you know, throughout last year, every farm that I would visit, big or small, dairy, beef, whatever, you know, the sustainability and environmental question would always be asked. And the farmers were always able to point to something that they are doing new, particularly young farmers, buffer zones, multi-sward species, low emission slurry spreading, da-da-da-da-da. There's an awful lot that seems to be going on. But there seems to be that message, or that image, is not, it doesn't seem to be getting out there. There seems to be a great divide and sometimes bitter debate about the future direction of farming and the image that's painted of Irish agriculture. Do you think it's a little bit unfair when you see, as you said, what's going on some farms and in individual farms around the country?
Yeah, I think I'd love to hear more from individual farmers. And I was writing for the Irish Times last week's edition, 50 People to Watch, and I had the pleasure of speaking to Joe and Eva Riley, who are farmers in Mayo. They're using a 7.5-acre field to farm as a market garden. Glossary is the name of their business. And they employ 6 people on 7.5 acres with no subsidies, with no, you know, no taxpayer is subsidising that. And that's the exciting stories that I'd love to hear from Irish farmers, talking about a farming system that benefits people, planet, animals, and everybody benefits from that system, because the food that's produced by that system is far more nutritious, it's far better for us. You know, they are struck by the 49 cent deals in the supermarkets, which is breaking the heart of the horticulture industry at the moment. But actually they find that their consumer isn't really interested in buying those, because, you know, we see those for what they are. They're a footfall driver, and we usually spend the savings on something else in the middle aisle. So I think consumers are thinking a lot more about food. Certainly COVID has forced people to, you know, from queuing at supermarkets in the very severe lockdowns, we spend a lot more time and we've engaged a lot more locally with local food producers. And that's a huge good news story for Irish farming.
Okay. And before I go to Diana, I just want to go back to Phelan. Phelan, on that issue, Catherine talks about regenerative farming and what's happening on a farm in Mayo there on 7 acres, but we like, is that a realistic option or alternative for the majority, we'll say, of dairy farmers or beef farmers?
No, there's a place for that type of enterprise and every other type of enterprise that exists out there. There's absolutely no question about that. But focusing on mainstream farming, and I think Catherine made a point there about, you know, the stories that she hears about the good work that's been done, and you made a very good point about how you go out and what you see being done. And I think there's a message here, perhaps it is that mainstream farming fails to communicate the positive things that they are doing to address the whole question of climate, environment, etc. So much is going on and not talked about, and maybe it needs to be publicised a bit more. And again, just picking up on the other point there, you know, Catherine made about the rain lashing, you know, that's one of our great natural resources in this country, the water and grass, and that's what enables us to have the family farm structure that we have. Now, we have to manage that in the way that is most sustainable. And again, the point that's made about clover swards, etc., mixed sward grazing, that's something that is being adapted, and indeed is something that we in the Farmers' Journal, along with KPMG, produced a report during the year, identifying, making that same point, just how it could be a win-win situation where we could reduce the emissions from Irish agriculture parallel to making good savings on farm. Now, the thing is, this takes time. You know, we have the targets now in place for what has to be done. We now need to have the framework and the strategy to deliver those. It's not just enough to set targets. We need to get the roadmap in place to get in there and to do that. And we have identified certainly how we could achieve a reduction of up to 18% reduction in emissions that would benefit farmers along the way as well. And I think that's the picture that we need to focus on. And perhaps from a farming point of view, we need to be better at explaining what we do rather than sitting back and let the debate go on without us.
Okay, well, I'm going to move on. Speaking of family farms, Diana Lindsay runs the family winery in beautiful Siena in Tuscany. And as I said, she's also the president of SAGER, the Young Farmers European Umbrella Organisation. It's great to have you on the programme. You represent, as I said, Diana, young farmers farmers across Europe. And when we highlight issues in Ireland, be it in housing, health or farming, we tend to feel that we are unique. But for example, do you see common challenges for young Italian farmers, the same sort of challenges that you hear that Irish young farmers are having?
Well, thank you, Damien, for having me this morning. It's a pleasure to be here and to be on your first show of the year. Definitely. There is a common thread when it comes to challenges for young farmers across Europe. There's, of course, differences that come from our regional differences, but there is a common thread when it comes to what the big challenges are. Anytime we touch upon the topic of access to land, that is most definitely one of our biggest roadblocks. And may it be in Italy, Belgium, Ireland, or Poland, it always seems to be an incredible roadblock when it comes to someone young who isn't from the farming system specifically, so someone who does not have land, to actually be able to have the capacity, financial capacity, to access land in Europe. So that is most definitely probably something that commons us a lot, and it's one of the big subjects we often have to touch upon when we discuss within our members in SEJA.
Yeah. Now, emissions targets, as we've been speaking about, they've been set, and new EU policies hopefully will entice production to become more less intensive. It'll be the young European farmers of today that you represent that will deliver these targets over the next 20, 30, 40 years. Are these targets achievable? Are young farmers ready to engage in this?
I would definitely answer yes to your second question. We are absolutely ready to engage and to find the practical solutions that can bring us to the achievement of these objectives, because they're very high. The standards that are being put, the bar is being raised really, really high at this moment. And there is a common feeling that it is important to shift the way we produce, to be more sustainable, to be more respectful of what is our most precious resource, which is our earth, our planet. We need healthy soils, we need healthy air, we need healthy plants in order to deliver safe and nutritious and sufficient food for Europe and for the world. So this is our big challenge, and it is something we absolutely feel we want to engage in. Having said that, because this is such an ambitious project, it really needs the know-how, the experience, the capacity of the farming system to help find those practical solutions, those solutions that can be applied, the ones that can actually deliver to the objective and just aren't, let's say, theoretical models that could instead, in return, destroy the system.
Yeah, and just before I go back to Catherine and Phelim, can I ask you again about the image of farming? Is it damaged, and is it putting off young people going into the business? And is that contributing to the broader problem of attracting young people into farming?
I truly believe it is. I think that for many years, there has been probably not the best farming system being put into place. And this, of course, has brought to some negative externalities that we cannot deny. So there has been a negative impact coming from the farming system. But so much has changed in even just the last 10 years in how we produce and how animal welfare is treated and becomes an issue, in how we resort to more sustainable practices. And none of that is being instead communicated. And of course, I think farmers are probably the worst communicators in the world. We kind of like just sit in our farms, and it's really hard for us to go out there and to react sometimes to the fact that normally what hits the press is a negative story in farming and not that positive instead example that can come. So I believe that because the objectives are so broad, but regard everyone, we need to work together with civil society, with the world of consumers, in order to achieve these objectives. Because if we produce in a more sustainable way, it means that also the producers need to understand that the consumers, that they are receiving more sustainable food. Mm. And this is something that they need to acknowledge, that they need to stand by and therefore work in, let's say, in an alliance with us.
Yeah, just on that, Catherine, is social media driving a culture war here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth remembering that a small fraction of people are actually on social media, and those voices can get very loud and very angry at times, especially around the farming debate. And it's great to hear Diana as a young woman farmer, because I think there is a growing interest among women in farming and in farming differently as well. I mean, going back to Phelim's point about, you know, the kind of, and it's something that I get a lot when I talk about these very sustainable Irish farms getting great prices for their products. And people say, oh, well, that's a niche market. I mean, I'm not sure there's any other business model that looks at an incredibly successful business and says, let's keep that as a niche. I mean, I think the focus has to be from a policy point of view, from a consumer point of view, from farmers' point of view, of how to make those sustainable, profitable, happy farms the mainstream farming the activity that we do in this country. The commodity market is under threat from all kinds of futures, including technology. I mean, technology is coming for our dinner plates in a way that I think in 10 years' time is going to transform the commodity market.
But there's an awful lot of reversal and unwinding to do there, because we export literally billions of euros worth of meat and dairy products all across the world.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you unwind all of that over a short period of time?
Well, I think you look at the price that farmers are getting for that product. So most of the meat, and especially in the beef sector, that's not a sustainable income for beef farmers. So, you know, an unwinding of that sector for beef farmers may not be a terrible story. It may be a terrible story for the processors and for, you know, the vested interests that make a lot of money from volume sales. But smaller and better sales of food to more local and connected communities is where, a farming community like Ireland can really lead the world and say, look, we've tried this, you know, the 1970s approach of growing everything and making everything bigger. And, you know, this is where our emissions levels are getting us. And while Phelim is right, you know, we aren't hearing enough about the good things that farmers are doing, but actually the reality is emissions are still growing. So we need to hear that changing before that story is fully told.
Okay, Phelim, what about that?
You know, I don't think it has to be an either or situation that what we would call conventional farming has to give way and leave a vacuum into which these other enterprises will go. I think they can develop side by side with each other. And ultimately, everything is market led. And, you know, we have a big ambition in the next strategy, the strategy through to 2030, to grow organic production in Ireland fourfold from about 2% land use to 8% land use. And, you know, if the market can be found for that and it is there, that will happen and that will be no problem. And what we find at the minute is I think that we have a number of what we would call smaller specialist enterprises, if we don't want to call them niche enterprises, that have very good business and very good direct consumer sales avenues and all of those things, and are working very hard in building that. Now, if we try to switch to move everything into that space, then it becomes very crowded and the objective that we want to achieve perhaps gets lost. But I think going back to mainstream agriculture, you know, we're now at the centenary point, and looking back over that 100 years, no sector has evolved as much in line with what was required by society at the given time as agriculture. You know, it went through the stage into from a highly labour-intensive industry into the mechanisation. Yes, we had the 70s and the 80s when we had the rapid growth in production. That's what the market signal was at the time. We pulled out hedges, we made fields bigger, we drained land, etc. That was what was to be done then, and now we are somewhat unwinding that, in that we have a rewetting program that we are encouraging planting of landscapes. And again, I come back to the point of communication that so many farms are doing so much of this, and perhaps, and again, an organisation like ours, perhaps we should be looking at that as well. That we need to communicate that more, what is actually being done across all Irish farms, not just the handful or the few or the specialist ones.
Right. Okay. Well, the word communication has been mentioned quite a lot this morning by all three of you, and listening to all three of you, maybe you should get together yourselves and create something to tell the story of farming, big, small, European and Irish wine growing and beef farming and all of that into the future.
It's not to say that big farming is bad. I think big farming is actually the fix for climate, especially the potential of soil to sequester carbon is phenomenal. Right. And if we can transform that, we have one of the biggest and longest standing agroforestry trials in not gold, Dr. Jim McAdam. You know, you can plant trees and still have livestock farming going on, and you can your product can be carbon neutral.
Okay,
at the end
look,
of that.
It's a topic we will return to certainly in the future and throughout 2022. It's been great chatting to you all, Catherine Cleary, Diana Lindsay in Tuscany in Italy, and Phelan O'Neill in County Tyrone. Thank you all for joining us on the programme this morning.